Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 71 of Slam Fire Radio for August 22nd, 2014. I am one of your hosts, The Fralate.
I am another one of your hosts, The Warning Shot.
And I am the last host to this week, anyway. Owen Swelling.
The Warrior. The Prepping Warrior. You don't even know your own name.
Yeah, if we use nicknames, you gotta use nicknames.
I'm so tired, I can just, like, hardly
keep my head
up.
How tired are you?
Sounds like a bad joke, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It does, yeah. No, it wasn't a joke. You're actually tired?
I am actually really tired.
Wow. Can I say, suck it up, cupcake.
Yeah,
what are you tired for? What did you do, like, go camping for the last two nights or something while you were at work?
Yeah, basically camping and work combined, not always a good thing.
So. No, see, when most people combine camping with vacation.
Yeah.
Owen combines work with vacation.
Lately, it seems to be work with everything.
Well, yep. Yeah. That's what happens when you go get a real job.
That's right. You should stop that.
Yeah. But welcome to summer's off, my friend.
Someday.
Which you will probably use for another job.
Yeah, most likely.
Why just have one job? Have 10.
Speaking of jobs, Matthew, why don't you tell us what you did with guns this week?
Well, I certainly didn't go to work at all.
Excellent.
Tell you that much, because I don't have a job in the summer. What did I do? Well, more gravel pit fun, and I'll just leave it at that, because I know how raptly attentive you guys are when I talk about shooting my .22s out in the gravel pit.
Oh, well, no, I'm just glad you clarified that. Oh, somebody's snoring.
Yeah.
He's asleep already. I'm just glad that you clarified that you were shooting your gun in the gravel pit. I mean, who knows what you would do in a gravel pit? I'm just saying.
That's right. You just never know.
You just never know.
You just never know. So, beside that, I did go to the range and did a couple of fun things. First of all, I shot the Armed Squirrels Rifleman Challenge. Is that what it's called?
I thought you shot an armed squirrel.
I shot an armed squirrel.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what it's called. It's the Rifleman's Challenge, the Armed Squirrels Project Rifleman's Challenge.
So
it's a new one now, right? What's the format of this one? I just saw your target, but...
Yeah, why would you want to read it? I mean, it makes way more sense to ask me about it.
It's better for the show.
It really is. No, I'm busting your chops. It's hilarious.
Is this the one that's five shots and then a reload and then five shots from kneeling and then reload and then five shots prone?
That's right.
In 45 seconds?
That's the one.
Yeah, but what distance? I saw Fred and Filthy doing it. They look like they were like
50 yards.
Far.
50 yards, yeah.
All right.
So it's a pretty good size target. It's about an 8-inch circle, I would guess. I didn't actually measure it, but it looked like about an 8-inch circle. And so you put that at 50, and yeah, like Owen said, it's five shots standing, and then kneeling, and then prone. But the thing is, you cannot transition with a loaded gun. So you have to actually wait till you're in the next position before you can load and then charge your gun. You can't do it on the fly. So the first time I did it, I actually was like Ipsic style, you know. The gun was loaded and ready to go before I was down to my first transition, so I had to stop and reset and do it properly. But it was fun. It was a bit more challenging than... Yeah, well, it was a bit more challenging than I thought it was going to be, but I got better results than I thought I was going to get, if that makes any sense.
And has Mark Housekeeper come out on the Gun Dudes yet to criticize any of these targets?
I certainly hope he does eventually, but...
Or has he gone and shot his own target yet? So
I don't know.
So we can see if he's any better, or if he's just a docker. That's right, Mark, I'm calling you out again.
That's always fun. No, nobody's called me out on it except Brian Bolivar, because he hates me and I suck.
Well...
So that's about it.
Brian's trying to play head games, because he won one challenge and now he thinks he's important.
Well, he thinks he's going to lose this one because apparently it's a pretty good shot or a pretty good target. I don't know. I didn't think it was all that impressive, but it's all right. I still had fun doing it. Now, the cool thing was I did bring out a bunch of different targets, and the first one that I shot, I actually intentionally missed every single shot into the upper white part of the target where the instructions are.
I saw that. I wondered about that.
My warning shot target.
Right.
Okay. So every shot was a warning shot. That one was actually the harder of the two to shoot because that section is smaller than the actual target.
Right.
So it was kind of, but yeah, it was fun and funny. So that was that. I did that, and then I broke out the 50 Beowulf along with a 22 conversion kit and, of course, my 5.56 upper and had some fun at the range. I'm shooting a range review video of the 50 Beowulf for my YouTube channel. It's not done yet. I've got about half the footage, so another couple of weeks, and you guys can watch my YouTube channel for that. That'll come out, but it was neat. I took one of my gongs that I have.
Is it the one I put a hole in?
No, not that one, because, no, it wasn't that one. Right. This one is, I don't know if anybody who lives by railway tracks, I mean, they might understand this, but everybody else might not. It's on the railway tie, that's the wooden thing, there is a square metal clamp that the actual rail attaches to. And I don't know what they're called, but there's tons of them around here because I live right by the train tracks, and they just, whenever they put new ones on, they just throw the old ones in the ditch. So I just go collect them and I use them as gongs. It's awesome.
How do they hold up? Because there's a guy in my club who's got a couple of them and he wants to turn them into a gong.
Handguns, no problem.
Right.
No problem at all. Rifles do put impressive craters in them. It's probably okay. The same style steel that big Ipsic gong we have at the range is. Because whenever I hit it with the 5.56, it made very similar holes to what we saw on that target there.
Right.
So definitely not a
You're talking
gong.
About the railroad and not the Ipsic gong.
Both of them would be about the same metal, I think.
Yeah, but I'm saying You made it sound like you shot the Ipsic gong with 5.56.
I didn't shoot the Ipsic gong with 5.56. I'd be in trouble if I did that. I shot my own. It was my personal gong. Mm. And yes, it left an impressive crater and dented out the back end of it. Like it made a bulge out the back. And so I was like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. But then I shot it with the 50 Beowulf. Holy, just about knocked the thing over. It was like shooting that little gong that you had with Mario's 50 Desert Eagle.
Yeah.
Same sort of thing, just about knocked it right over. But because it's such a slower round, the 50 Beowulf's only going about 1,800 feet per second as opposed to, 3,600 feet per second in the 5.56, it barely dented it. Made a great big mess, transferred a lot of energy, knocked that thing around, but it didn't do hardly any damage at all.
Interesting.
So it was kind of neat. It's definitely not any sort of armor-piercing round, but you could tell by the amount of energy it transferred that it would definitely do major damage to, like, a radiator and front end of an engine block if somebody was trying to, like, stop a car.
Question.
Yeah.
Have you actually chronographed the Beowulf rounds yet?
Not yet. I actually brought my chronograph.
Really
with me.
Should, and then see what kind of recipe you guys have actually cooked up, because Maybe you're underpowered.
Maybe. But yeah, I actually did bring my chrono to do that, and then completely forgot to set it up. There was another guy there shooting, and so I had to time my shots with his and stuff to make sure that we weren't interfering with each other. So, and I just completely forgot to chronograph it. So I'll get Owen to make up some more rounds for me because I'm just about through all the ones that I had.
I don't even know if I have any more, actually.
I think I have 7 rounds left, so I have enough to chronograph.
Have you found any more brass, or do you just got what you originally got?
No, I've got a whole – I've got like 200 pieces of brass.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, lots of brass. You need some more projectiles and powder, though, I think.
And
I've got about 8 pounds of powder. I've got lots of powder here, but I need the projectiles.
Right.
I need to order up some more.
Well, we'll get some then.
It'd be interesting to see how many times you can reload a piece of that brass until it cracks.
It's not that high pressure, I don't think. I mean, it's not like a bottleneck rifle cartridge where you're putting, 60, 70,000 PSI through it. I don't think it gets up that high.
So it's kind of like comparing 9mm to 45 when you compare 5.56 to Beowulf.
Sort of. I think it'd be more like comparing 357 SIG to 45.
Yeah, I was just trying to do a little foreshadowing.
I understand what you're doing there. Yeah.
Okay.
Now I do. Now that I've said something and you've explained it to me and I continue talking, make myself look like an idiot. But whatever. Well,
all right. Anything else?
I don't think so, no. Just, like I said, just what I did. So, yeah, it was fun. That's all I did. Trevor, what did you do?
Sunday, I went out and shot a couple of rounds of trap. And we all got cleaned by William this time. I'm not sure if I mentioned this on the show before, so I'll go through it. William is 10 years old, and he's McIntyre's girlfriend's kid. And
I'm glad you finished that sentence off. William is McIntyre's girlfriend. Wait, what?
Girlfriend's kid.
Right. Okay, there we go. That makes way more sense now. Okay.
Yeah. And he's a natural athlete, whatever he picks up, soccer or hockey or whatever, he's good at it. So this week he cleaned us with his new Mossberg, which he won from Jason last week.
You won it from him?
He won it from him. I wasn't at Trap 2 weeks ago.
You should have been. You might have won a Mossberg.
Yeah.
Well, except that, no, you wouldn't have.
Well, I got a little bit of crap because William had been using my Versamax and shooting really well with it as opposed to what he had before. He was shooting this lightweight, single-shot, kick-me-all-over-the-range shotgun that McIntyre gave him to use.
Like an old Cooey or Baycal or
something?
Something
like that, yeah. Hammer around it and stuff. And when the first couple of times he tried it, he didn't finish his round because it was just beating him up too bad.
Right.
And then he was starting, you know, then as the summer progressed, he was finishing and stuff. And one day I offered him my Versamax, and he beat my score with it.
Right.
So I punched him.
Yeah, as you should. I mean, whenever you lose, you have to have some sort of outburst of anger where you punch your opponent, right?
And if he's 10 years old, you come on.
You're going to win. I mean, you don't start fights, you're not going to win, right?
Exactly, right? Yeah. So I hit him. Good. And anyway, I didn't go back the following week, and they were almost willing to come up and get my Versamax for William to use. But
you didn't
Jason,
go back because you were pouting, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I didn't have a legitimate reason I was pouting.
No, yeah, no, that makes
sense.
It's not
because I was out of town.
No.
With my wife or anything.
No.
So he used, what did he use? He used Jason's Mossberg, and Jason was complaining that since he lost his 870 in the fire, his trap scores have gone down. He's never been able to shoot trap as well as he did with his 870, blah, blah, blah. Whatever the key, well, I don't know if that's his excuse or not, because he bought a new Remington, because he had to, because William has his gun.
Right.
That. He's still not shooting very well. Anyway, William shot whatever score he shot, call it 12 or 13, and McIntyre said to him, if you shoot another round and beat your previous score, I'll give you my shotgun.
So it's a Mossberg what?
It's kind of a 500-ish kind of thing. It's got wood on it, right? So I don't care.
You don't care. Yeah.
No.
You're out. You're like, it's a Mossberg something with wood. Okay, I understand. Yeah, it's good.
Jason's new gun, which he had for all of 10 minutes when I knew exactly what it was, is the Remington 887 Magnum, which is all synthetic, right? So obviously I know what that is.
The Remington 87, yes. No, that makes sense.
Yeah. So 887, I believe it is, Magnum? Is that the model number? You know, the one that's like completely covered in polymer, including the receiver?
Oh, the 877.
Is it 877? I thought it was 887.
So. Oh, maybe it's 887. No, maybe it is. Maybe it is. See, I was making fun of you, but now it turns out you were right. So I'm sorry.
No, you're not. So,
no, I'm not.
Don't apologize to him.
I'm Canadian. I can't help it.
That's true.
That's really heartfelt, Owen. Don't apologize to that guy. He's not worthy of your apologies. Yeah, it didn't come out cold at all or nothing.
No.
Anyway, friend of me. William beat us all except for Pat. Pat's been, and I think, did you win the charity shoot? Or did Pat win the,
No,
and
I won.
Pat must have been second. Because Pat's been winning every trap, that trap every weekend that we've been shooting all summer.
What are his scores usually like?
He's knocking on 20s. You know, he's never under a 17. He's always between 17 and 20.
Oh, okay, cool.
So that's out of 25, in case the listeners don't know.
Yep.
Okay, so the listeners don't.
You're right. You
know.
You're right again. Look, that's three times this week that you've been right.
I can hardly stand it.
Yeah, I'm out. See you guys. You can finish the show without me. Trevor, all by yourself, bud.
All right. So let me go on to say how I hate my co-host.
Right.
And so that was Trap. William beat everybody, and I'm never going back.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, no, I'm having a lot of fun with Trap. I've only missed.
It's fun, isn't it?
Once. Yeah, I've been shooting Trap all summer. I just don't bother talking about it because it's Trap.
And you suck at it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. My average of 12 to 13 is safe.
Look, it's starting. You got to start somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I
was supposed to teach you some shotgunning stuff when I was up at the paracourse, and I forgot.
Oh, that's right. We totally forgot. Yeah. So, but the Trap section at our club is completely revitalized. They've cleaned out the trap house, years and years of basically neglect in there. It's all been cleaned. It's all been painted. They've edged all of the where you stand,
yep.
Patio blocks or whatever. That's all been edged, and they're going to tar them to help, you know, keep them preserved. The trap machine, we've got a new electric trap machine and a new oscillating base, and that was not permanently mounted. It was temporary, so you had to set it up and tear it down, set up. Now it's all mounted perfectly inside the trap house, and they got the angle correct, and you run it from the outside with the push button.
Have you shot it with the oscillator on it now?
Oh, yeah. The last three times we've been using the oscillating base.
Isn't it fun with the oscillating base? You just don't know where that bird's going to go.
And the ones that you should not hit, you blow out of the sky.
Yeah.
The ones that are just going straight out in front of you, begging to be shot, you miss.
It's one of the hardest ones. I think a straightaway shot is one of the hardest shots there is, and because you have to anticipate where that clay is going to be, and you have to obstruct it with your barrel. You can't see it when you...
I always see it. I shoot two eyes open and hardly ever see my gun. I just focus on the target and I shoot it, and the straightaway ones I find the easiest.
And that's what you're supposed to do, Matthew. I went back to closing my left eye because sometimes...
Well, you're left eye dominant, so it's hard for you when you're shotgunning.
I'm looking at the left side of my barrel.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
So it's kind of challenging. So I'm just trying to teach myself to do it with one eye open. But
well, just go to the range with your contact instead of your glasses and just put one contact in your right eye and that's it.
Interesting.
I've tried it before. It's not great, but it is interesting.
I may also put the foggy Scotch tape over one lens too.
That helps.
Anyway, but even with one eye closed, I'm still looking at the bird, not the sight. So
yeah. That's good. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. So then after that Monday, I went out to the range because I had taken all three arrows out the week before and moved all my optics around stuff. So I went out to re-zero my STI and my NEA. The NEA has got the EOTech on it, so I've got that zeroed at 36 meters, which has me, I don't know, 4 inches high. Something like that. You know the gong that the steel gong that we shot at with Mario's Desert Eagle?
Yeah.
When that's at 100, I put the dot of my EOTech right on the bottom edge of it, and I get a hit.
Oh, okay.
So it's shooting.
So, yeah, well, that's what Daniel Shaw generally likes, doesn't he? A 36-yard zero, because it's out to 400 or something without adjusting? Out to 300 without adjusting.
Yeah. So you're high at 100. You're on at 2, and you're low at 3.
Right.
So, and what else? Oh, yeah, and zeroed the loophole on the STI, and then had fun smacking the gong. Buddy shows up with his son in a with a rimfire rifle. They get out of the truck. They make their way over to the rimfire range, and the sound of my NEA attracted him. So he walks up on the covered firing point, he looks at me, he looks at my gun, he said, "What is that?" So I'm tired of this, right? So it's a gun? Is it a 30-06? No. Showed him the bullet. Why is it so loud? Because it's got a short barrel. And all. Anyway, I tried not to be sarcastic, but I'm just like, this guy's going to ask me how is that legal and how many bullets. I'm over it, right?
Yeah. Anyway, no, you can only answer those questions so many times.
Yeah, I wasn't rude, but no, I mean, you know, I let him know that, you know, a gun is a gun is a gun. So.
Yeah.
And then NEA has a couple of products out that I discovered this week that I am drooling over, longing for. Owen disagrees with me. I don't know. I don't think you care either way. But I was going to put my Daniel Defense Mark 18 for sale so that I could buy NEA's new 14.5 carbine chambered in 7.62x39.
Well, that's got a soft spot in your heart for that 7.62x39, doesn't it?
It sure does, yeah. I really, really enjoyed my 8.58. And what's that, Owen?
I can't figure out why.
I think it's a good round. I think it's a very effective round. I think inside of 300, I think it hits harder than 5.56 does. I just, you know, and again, it comes back to the 9 versus 45 debate. Some guys want to throw a big chunk of lead downrange. Some guys are happier with a smaller chunk of lead going really fast. And I didn't realize how effective the 5.56 actually was until you guys started your little video series on is it bulletproof? And you had that piece of AR 500 steel, and the most amount of damage incurred was incurred by a 5.56 round. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's a 55 grain bullet, but it's smoking fast. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's effective. A big bullet going almost as fast is as effective.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, up against steel is one thing. Up against flash is a completely other thing. So,
yeah.
You know, you got to tie that in, too. You can't just look at a steel target and say, well, it made a bigger crater, so it's got to be more powerful. Well, no, it was just going faster.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're talking about that, I was talking about that 50 Beowulf, that's a, you know, almost an ounce of lead smacking that thing at almost 2,000 feet per second. Well, that's still just steel. I mean, imagine that hitting a deer. It's going to do way more damage than a 5.56 is going to, at least in my mind it would. So
I agree, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I like that round. I really do. And I like the availability of that round. I like the price of that round.
Is it cheaper than 5.56?
It is.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Quite a bit.
No. Well, not that much.
Well, I mean, we used to get
1600 for what?
It might be 10 cents a round cheaper.
Right.
But well, it's crows. But it's crows of ammo. So
yeah.
how much is it worth to tear apart your gun every time?
Yeah, well, with the NEA and the coating that they have on it and the chrome lined barrel, they're like, wipe it down and you're good.
They don't have a chrome lined barrel, the NEAs.
I think this one might. They mentioned something.
They don't.
I'll have to go back and read their ad.
Maybe the 5.56 ones don't know them, but I think the 7.62 ones might.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they know corrosive ammo is going to be going through it, then they would chrome line the barrels.
So here's my thought on this, Trevor. Why don't you just buy another upper?
Yeah, well, I'll get into that.
Okay.
today, you know, Kyle Marconi, he said that very same thing. He's like, dude, why don't you just forget all this noise about selling your day on defense, keep it, and just buy the upper? Like, you couldn't be more right. So, yeah, that's one of my shoutouts this week. So I decided not to sell my Mark 18 and just save up the cash and buy the upper. And I think it's only, they've got them listed on FRC's website for like $750. Now the gun itself is $1,200. So yeah. it's a fair amount of savings. It's not like, they've got the NEA 18 inch barrel, right? The NEA with the 18 inch barrel is on sale right now for $889 at SFRC.
That's a good price. Wow.
That is a great price. Yeah. So
cool.
Okay.
Well, here, I'm going to actually make an unprecedented move.
You're going to interrupt?
I'm going to interrupt, and I'm going to ask Owen what he did, and we're going to split up Trevor's time, what he did with guns this week, and he's going to talk about his last point after Owen tells us what he did.
No,
just to kind of give the listeners a break.
I got one more NEA thing.
Oh, one more NEA thing. Okay.
Yeah. All right. You're not doing nothing. I'm lead host this week. Sit down and be quiet.
No, it's too... hey, I can edit that part out, too, if you like.
They, NEA makes a dedicated 22.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
really?
And it's not like the Smith & Wesson one, the M&P 22.
Yeah.
That thing's all plastic.
Right.
I thought it was a legit AR, but it's all plastic. So the NEA one is a legit AR that's just chambered in 22.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a dedicated AR in 22 caliber, so it's going to.
Too bad they're still restricted in Canada.
Yeah, but it's going to have a different twist rate on the barrel.
Yeah, 1:16 probably instead of the
back,
1:9.
Yep. You know, great training tool.
Absolutely, I concur.
Yeah. So, all right, Owen, what did you do this week?
I wonder what that'll take for mags.
They seem to have a mag with it. I don't know if it's a proprietary mag or if it's going to use a mag that's currently available for a kit.
Yeah, I wonder if they would use the CMMG ones. Those are pretty popular. It'd be nice if they did, because there's lots of those mags around.
Yeah, well, Owen tells us what he did. No, I can't do it on this computer. I was going to look it up, but we'll find out.
I'll look it up while Owen tells us what he did with guns.
Okay, didn't do a whole lot. I took...
You're going to have to take longer than that. I haven't even got onto their website yet.
last weekend, I took my sister and our whole family to the range. She had never shot a gun before, never even handled a gun before. This is one of my younger sisters. Well, they're all younger than me, I guess, but one of the younger sisters. Anyway.
No, give us your family history there first.
Yes, I'll give you my whole family tree. So she turned 23, and she decided that this year she was going to do 23 things that she'd never done before.
Oh, that's cool.
So I said, well, I know something you haven't done before.
Right now, Filthy is saying, I wonder if that involves dating clones.
Yeah. So I said, well, I know something you haven't done before, and that's go to the range. So she said, well, you know, I will do that. So off we went. I packed up, of course, all my pistols and the AR and, you know, my 22 rifles and a 30-30 and a 12 gauge. So I didn't know what she would want and how far up the line she'd be comfortable with, but I brought kind of a little bit of everything. And yeah, she did very well. She's a bit of a natural shot and, she shot everything all the way up. We just kept up in the ante a little bit. She shot the 22 rifles, and then I said, well, do you want to get a little bit bigger? She said, okay. So I pulled out the AR. She shot the 5.56, and then I asked her, are you comfortable with that? She's like, yeah, that was fine. Do you want to shoot a 30-30? Okay. So we shot 30-30 right up to the 12 gauge, and didn't have any problems. She had a little bit of a bruise on her shoulder the next day, but just from not being used to it.
Yeah. So she had fun then.
Oh, she had a great time. Yep.
Any handgun stuff?
Yeah. We went up and she shot, of course, I started out with the 22 pistol.
Yeah.
And then she shot the 9mm, the Glock 17, and did very well.
Cool.
Just at 5 yards, but she was, I think, her first 10 shots. I took a picture of it. I think her first 10 shots were pretty much all in the A zone on an IPSC target at 5.
That's good.
So that was, I think she was... I was pretty high. I thought that was pretty good for, you know, very first time ever handling a handgun.
Yeah.
And she probably 40, 50 rounds through the handguns. And I don't know. I can't lost track of how many. She put a couple rounds through the 30-30. That was the one gun that I thought she might be a little shy of.
Right.
Just because I brought my Goose gun, so it has the kickoff.
Yeah,
on
yeah.
It, the Beretta Extrema 2. So it's pretty soft with target loads.
But the 30-30, there's no recoil pad on that. That's just straight wood, isn't it?
That's right. So I thought that might be the one thing that she might shy away from. But I put one round in, and she fired it. And I showed her how to eject the shell. And I dropped another one in. She fired it. And I said, had enough or do you want some more? She said, oh, I'll take a couple more of those. So I went back a couple more and loaded it up, and she shot it. And she might have shot 4 more. Yeah. I can't remember now. Anyway, yeah. She shot well. I mean, she was shooting pie plate sized group with it. So
that's all right. Is this something that, like, I know she's not a huge gun person. You said she seemed to enjoy herself. How much?
Well, she basically said, I can see the appeal.
Oh, okay. But she's still not. Probably I don't, get her license and get into it.
Herself. I don't see it being something that she'd be interested in doing that way. But she genuinely enjoyed it, and she said, "I can see why people would want to do this, and I can see why people would want to do this as a hobby." And she said, "I can." And after she shot the handguns, she said, "I can really see why people would want to do something like IPSC and run around and shoot and do action shooting." She said, "That makes total sense now that I've shot."
Yeah. Yeah, I actually watched a video on YouTube. Actually, I think it was on Facebook. It was taking anti-gun liberals to the range, letting them shoot for the first time, and then getting their reactions.
Yeah,
so it was interesting. Some of them were like, it was fun, but it still should be illegal. It's like,
yeah,
you guys don't even know what you're talking about.
And then the last lady that basically admitted she wanted to do it again, she looked so embarrassed that she
I
had
know.
To. That she
Yeah, no, they're so ingrained with, you know, this has got to be negative. We've got to keep it negative because I've been told it's bad. So
funny because that's very similar to the experience that I'm going to talk about when that one's done.
Yeah.
Well, and she certainly wasn't anti-gun by any means.
Right.
Just again, as with most people, the majority of people are not raving anti-gun people. They're simply people who have fallen into the trap of believing everything the media spins for them.
Right.
So like most people, they just don't know. They've never experienced it. They've made a judgment on something they haven't experienced. And as the saying goes, don't knock it till you've tried it.
That's it.
And yeah, so she's tried it, and I think she would go again. I mean, if the family was going, she would say, yeah, I'll go again.
That's
so
cool.
Yep. And then kind of getting geared up for a black badge course this weekend.
A black badge course? Can I come?
I think you should. Beauty, what a wonderful idea.
No, I got a match.
So
yeah, I got to actually. I designed the stages for the mini match for the Black Badge course. And Trevor, it's too bad you're not going to be there.
Yes, that is the other thing. I just was thinking about Matthew. We should get all those put into WinMSS.
Sure.
And have the match. Have the match all ready to go. We'll do that tomorrow afternoon. Have it all ready to go for Saturday.
And the listeners are going to be so pleased to find out that we've finally got our schedule nailed down for tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we can, you know, we can tell them their scores right at the end of the day. So
that'll be cool.
Because you and I are not going to shoot this one.
Right.
What?
We decided we're not going to shoot. We're just going to RO.
Okay.
It's not going to be, at least as I understand it, it's not open to everybody else. It's just the Black Badgers that are going to be shooting it.
Yes, yeah, as far as I know.
Yeah.
And so, that being said, Owen and I don't want to just show off, basically.
It's called modeling.
Yeah.
This is
when you're this good of a model, people just get embarrassed.
I think you're ripping them off.
We should shoot?
Yeah, they could benefit from the experience of watching a couple of seasoned shooters tear up some stages. They could learn from that. If they just see each other doing it that way, there's no...
I never even thought of that. Trevor, why didn't we ask you this before?
I really don't know.
We're going to have to rethink this, Owen.
You got
to
run everything by me, frankly, guys. I just tried to tell you that before, but whatever. I'm the dumb one on the show. I know. Let me put my helmet on.
Yeah, put your helmet back on, would you?
All right.
I guess there is some validity to that.
I guess you hate to admit it.
Well, on the other hand, I go, well, if I was brand new, would I be intimidated by a couple seasoned shooters, and would I just want to compete against the other people who are quote-unquote brand new?
Well, the other thing we can do, Owen, is just not put our scores in.
Hold on, Matthew. The next match that these guys go to, guess what?
Yeah.
It's going to be seasoned shooters. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
I understand that, but I just thought it would be more fun for them to.
Well, no, I think Trevor's right, and you can write that down, Trevor, in the calendar.
I will. That's like the fourth one.
Trevor is right.
But I like your idea, Matthew. You don't necessarily have to score yourselves against them.
That's right. We can put ourselves in, and we can be our... You and I will fight it out.
Put yourselves in open or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That's it. I'm moving my holster.
Open minor.
So. I'm not going to wear a holster. I'm just going to, hold
Mexican style.
There you go.
Wait, that's not... That I can say that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Because that's the other border. We're the border to the north that the Americans like, not the other one.
Well, tolerate more.
Tolerate, yeah.
Because, see, what's happening is a man and a woman from Canada aren't illegally entering the U.S. and making babies. That's not how American citizens were supposed to be created.
Right. Okay, and on that note, Owen, if you're done.
Yeah, you done, Owen?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So I just wanted to share a little experience that I had in a bar, of all places, while winning a drinking contest. I got – true story. Pictures on Facebook. I got into a gun control debate early on in the evening, thankfully, with a doctor and his son. They described themselves as conservatives, but raised to be very anti-gun. And they went back and forth, and – finally, the doctor's comments, he just kind of like gave up, and he said, I don't know how many, he just said it multiple times. You're very well schooled in this subject. And he just kind of shook his head like.
And you should have been like, and I just schooled you, fool.
Yeah. But he wasn't, he wasn't being confrontational whatsoever. So it was actually a pretty pleasant debate. And it's the best gun control debate I've ever had with anyone.
So you recorded this for the show, right? So we can all hear it?
Oh, I wish, but it was nice because, I mean, you know, this is somebody who's, you know, he's an intelligent man. He's a doctor, and his brother was there and also very intelligent. And I had to take the two of them on. The only time it got a little ugly was when we talked about the Moncton situation and I discussed my article. They certainly weren't ready for that. So we brought it back to gun control in Canada. And I just,
that's a big step for a lot of people to go to concealed carry.
Even for gunnies. No, it wasn't about concealed carry. It was about, I would have shot the guy.
Oh, okay. Right. The whole, citizens standing up for themselves.
Right. And their take on it was that I would have created more casualties, not less. And my take on it was,
I know how to shoot straight.
Yeah. And, and they kept coming back to, well, we know lots of people who hunt and they really shouldn't own guns. And I said, yeah, I know a lot of people that have a driver's license and can't drive a car either.
Yeah.
But you can't paint us all with the same brush and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
He just, in the end, like I said, he just gave up and, you know, I could see him sitting back and reflecting on the conversation. He didn't walk away and say, I'm still right. You didn't change any of my beliefs.
Right.
He really walked away and contemplated what had just happened. And you could see he was working it out in his head. Right. And then the brother was like, well, if only every gun owner was like you, then we would have no problems.
Well, 90% of us are.
Exactly, right?
And they just, the thing is, you don't hear about all the good drivers on the road.
That's right.
Hear about the idiots that run through stop signs and crash into school buses, you know?
So the doctor went off, gave up, and the brother stayed at my end of the table. And then when the doctor was gone, the brother says, the truth is, you know, I was raised anti-gun, but I think guns are awesome. Like, I can't wait to get out and shoot a gun. Like, I shot a shotgun once. I loved it. I want to do it again. I can't wait. Like,
so you invited him to the range?
Well, I give him all of Dougie's information, right?
Oh, okay. Right, because you weren't.
We were in Miramichi, yeah. So the other neat thing that happened was I ran into a NFA field officer. I'm walking outside.
Accidentally or on purpose or?
Well, I guess just kind of.
You just shoved him?
Didn't literally
you
walk.
You guys into okay? Him.
Yeah, we're fine.
Did you blow a calf muscle again?
Heavens. So I walk out. Again, this is why these things take so long. I walk outside to get some air, and he sees my – I've got my NFA hoodie on, no compromise, and I got my NFA hat on.
Yeah,
so
where'd you get those, by the way?
You get them off the website.
Oh, you buy them.
Yeah. So I'm walking out, and he says, no compromise. And I'm like, yeah. And I thought he was
drunk.
Start something, right? Yeah, I thought, is he drunk? Is he gonna, you know, how's this gonna go? So anyway, I just kind of kept walking. He put his hand out and he pointed at his hat. He's wearing an NFA hat.
Nice.
I was like, oh, how awesome is that? And then there was a lawyer outside and he was pretty drunk and he's like, oh, so you guys are the ones that think everybody should carry a gun. I'm not going here with this guy. It's like he's just looking for a fight, right? He's drunk. And anyway, so he told us he was a lawyer and he told us about this case once that he did. And I wouldn't want him to have, I would not have wanted him to represent me. It was a gun situation. Anyway, he goes back inside.
So a doctor and a lawyer walk into a bar is what you're saying.
Yeah. And this guy, I hope he wasn't working on a file, but he was working on a file. And then fell asleep at his table.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, man. Only in the Miramichi. So.
Beauty.
Yeah. So it was awesome because the doctor really walked away and really, you know.
Thought about what you.
Yeah. He thought about what we talked about. And cool. It was so awesome because I was getting a chance to actually dispel myths for a person right there. We talk about it on the show, but we're preaching to the choir, right?
Doing it live is way more fun.
Yeah, these guys were shooting questions at me, and I'm like, well, actually. And then it was, you know, why do you need an AR-15? A gun is a gun is a gun. Well, no, it's not. But, and then they would say something. I'm like, well, actually, here's what the media told you, but here's the facts, right? Yeah. And, so.
It's very refreshing when you can do that with someone who's actually listening.
Yes. Yes, so
someone who thinks logically about things, and when you present them with facts, they go, huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Instead of someone who's totally driven by their emotion.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into upcoming events and some news. We've got the multi-gun happening in Restigouche, September 13th, sponsored by PressCheck Ventures. It's now one day, 8 or 9 stages, $20. Walk-ons are permitted. If you prepaid, can't make it, need a refund, let me know. Thunderbird Tactical Carbine Clinic, October 11th. There's one spot left. If you've got a rifle, come on, man. It's only $200 and about 400 or 500 rounds of ammo. You will. How often has Daniel Shaw come to Canada?
Once.
Tommy came to Canada, and we've been raving and ranting about it ever since. We're going to do this. You're going to miss out. Like if
yeah, this is going to be awesome.
This is. I mean, and Tommy's good, but Daniel Shaw is a master instructor from the Marines, and now he's doing classes privately. Like the last part of his career was just teaching people how to use their rifle more effectively. This is probably going to be one of the best classes, if not the best class to ever take place in Canada. You really don't want to miss out. If you got a rifle, scrape together $200 and be there. Contact us if you want the spot. News. Let us talk about news. Owen, you're tired, and when you're tired, you don't read well, so I'd like you to take this one, please.
Okay, sure. That means I actually have to sit up, you know, and scroll down. And
yeah, buddy, making you part of the process.
Pay attention to what's going on.
All right. So, a so-called standoff at Candle Lake Gun Range ends peacefully. A highway to Candle Lake was closed for several hours Monday night during a standoff between RCMP and an allegedly armed man. Police responded to a call of a distraught man at the Candle Lake Gun Range on Highway 120. About 10 kilometers south of the Candle Lake Village in northern Saskatchewan, around 6:30 p.m. The 31-year-old man was allegedly armed with multiple guns and at a gun range. And witnesses heard shots fired.
Really? Again? At a gun range?
Yeah. He was threatening to harm himself.
Oh, okay.
Police blocked off the highway and were able to contact the man via telephone. He surrendered peacefully around 9:20 p.m. and was taken into police custody. RCMP said his wife and children were at the scene earlier in the day, but were taken to safety. The man was not injured during the standoff. Several firearms were seized at the scene. According to police, charges are still being considered, RCMP said.
I look at this as a job well done by the RCMP. The guy was at the gun range. He was armed. He was suicidal. And they talked him down. There was no suicide by cop, and they didn't allow him to kill himself either. Too bad that he found himself in such a dark place, but I'm glad the RCMP handled it this way and just didn't shoot him or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it ended well.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of an odd situation because it happened at a gun range, so I'm sure that's probably why it made the news.
Well, you know why it happened at a gun range? Because this is Canada, and that's the only place you're allowed to load your gun.
That's right. Yeah, that was it. He was just following the law.
Firearm suicides can't happen in the home.
That's right.
No, you can't load your gun. So
when they say that charges are being considered, it would be kind of interesting to see what kind of charges they could possibly bring
against
him.
Unsafe storage right there off the bat.
He's legally at the range.
Yeah.
You know, he can legally have his firearms loaded. I mean, I understand he probably loses guns because he's suicidal, but
the charges would be like creating a disturbance.
Public nuisance.
So, let's face it. You know, if he hadn't have done what he did, it cost us money. When the RCMP show up and they got to get suicide intervention people there and stuff like that, it costs money. There's got to be a consequence for his actions.
Yeah.
So, but you can't. If you're suicidal, you're depressed, life's rough enough, and then you get talked out of it and then face criminal charges. Your situation didn't exactly improve. So, anyway. Okay, so now a slam fire first, a podcasting first, probably a firearms industry first.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever been done before.
Never been debated before, I'm pretty sure.
No. And we feel it's important to go there. We owe it to the listeners. We're going to step up, and we are going to finally settle once and for all I can't say finally, it's never been even questioned. We decided to look at 9 versus 45. and bring to you the definitive answer, which caliber is in fact superior.
That's right. We, by the end of this show, you will know. Definitely.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt. No more doubt.
You will like what we tell you to like.
That's it, and period.
Yeah.
Full stop. So, I don't even know why we're going to debate this. Let's just tell them that 22 is the best and just carry on.
And move on.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. All right.
Well, thanks for listening. All right.
In the in the debate of, you know, 9
versus
45,
22 is the best. 22 is the best.
And Braden Hunacy?
You nailed it.
40 short and weak. It's short, the 40.
Short and weak. I love it.
Well, I mean, it got that nickname for a while after it had first come out. It was too watered down.
Yeah.
So. But now you can get some 40 that is on the low end of the 10 mil, right?
Yes, you can. So, and some 10 mil that's on the high end of the 40.
I made it up. 9x25 Dillon, which is a neck down 10 mil to accept a 9 mil bullet. That's just all kinds of crazy.
I bet you. Is that the one that they put the 80 grain projectile in and really make it
something,
scream?
Yeah, something stupid like that.
Crazy.
Basically melts going through the air.
I'd like to see the 10 mil neck down to 22.
That'd kind of be like a 22-250. That's what it would look like.
Not as powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we probably need
off
to cut all this. All right, we're gonna start with an article. As some of you may already know, the FBI is looking at changing calibers again. Bit of history: there was a shootout. They felt outgunned. They had been carrying 38 revolvers forever and a day. And then they ditched those, and they actually came out with equipped their agents or geared their agents up with a 10 mil, and then they couldn't shoot that. So then they went to a 40, and they've been doing a 40 for quite some time. Well, now they're actually looking at going down to a 9 mil. And it's not because they can't shoot the 40s. 9 millimeter ammunition has come a long way in the last 20 years. So let's go through this article here as best as I can, which won't be very good, but here we go. On July 25th, 2014, the Federal Bureau of Investigation released a pre-solicitation notice for a family of pistols chambered in 9mm, and in doing so, fanned the embers of the great debate over pistol calibers. You know what? I'm afraid. I think Gun Nation already did this exact article.
Oh, well then, perfect.
Although it had finally and thankfully showed signs of petering out in the Flash, the 9mm versus 45 Phoenix, which sold so much ink for the gun press over the years, has risen once again from the ashes. Sigh. Some of you may wonder why the FBI solicitation caused so much commotion, and the answer is best summarized in one word. Miami, and they're referring to the Miami shootout. In April of 1986, two FBI agents were killed and five were wounded, three of them grievously, in a protracted gun battle with two hardcore felons. In the aftermath of this horrific shooting, the FBI determined that the principal adversary had been struck with an FBI 9mm jacketed hollow point bullet. Okay, so yeah. He was shot, but it didn't do anything. By the end of the decade, the FBI was leading a migration away from 9mm towards larger calibers, such as the 10mm and its progeny, the 40 Smith & Wesson. A series of wound ballistic panels hosted by the FBI and the eventual development of the FBI protocol for law enforcement ammunition testing both clearly indicated the FBI's dissatisfaction with the 9mm ammunition available at that time. So a recent pre-solicitation notice for 9mm pistols seems like a radical reversal and come as a shock to those familiar with the FBI's historical aversion to the 9mm. There have been a variety of reactions to the announcement. Considering power, It's an article of religion among the 45 crowd that the 9mm cartridge lacks the mass and energy necessary to provide adequate terminal performance. This group conveniently ignores the incredible progress that has been made in ammunition technology since Miami and fails to recognize that today's 9mm ammunition is vastly superior and capable of doing everything that can be reasonably expected from handgun ammunition, regardless of caliber. Not to be outdone, the 9mm crowd continues to beat the capacity drum, ignoring the fact that the advent of wide-body magazines for the 45 ACP have largely negated 9mm's historical advantage in this area. Each of these groups is mired in 30-year-old arguments. They're missing the fact that the FBI's new interest in 9mm pistols is not some kind of traitorous act, and neither is it an admission that they made an error in leaving the 9mm behind decades ago. The truth is that they've conducted an honest evaluation of their requirements and the current state of technology and found that today's 9mm answers their needs. The FBI's renewed interest in the 9mm doesn't indicate that other cartridges are less capable or that they are a poor choice for law enforcement. The truth is, with modern ammunition, any of these calibers currently in use by law enforcement will do the job. Yet, none of them will turn a handgun into the hammer of Thor. That's true.
I mean, it is true, and they've got a good point there. A lot of progress has been made in handgun ammo in the last, couple of decades. Mm-hmm. You've gone from, well, like Trevor said, I mean, the Smith & Wesson shortened week, the 40s shortened week. You know, when they first came out, they downloaded it so much that it was, why didn't you just shoot 9?
Mm-hmm.
You know, now 9 is more powerful than what the 40 Smith & Wesson was when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And if you get into a lot of guys will say, well, never mind the 45, because, to get the capacity you need, you're carrying a very large framed gun, a wide body gun. I mean, my Glock 21 SF was a double stack, but a big gun, compared to the Glock 19, let's say, big gun. So concealability and all that. So the go-between, of course, the balance in between the two is the 40.
Mm-hmm.
But with the advent of plus P plus ammunition, you're going to get so close to the same ballistics out of a 9 to the 40. If I'm talking plus P plus ammo, compare that to, standard factory 40 caliber ammunition. Why not go to the 9?
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense.
Another disadvantage of the 40 is that 40 caliber guns are built on 9mm frames for the most part. Especially in the beginning, they were simply converting 9mm pistols to be chambered in 40, and they were beating the snot out of the guns, and the guns were wearing out faster. So you got a better quality 9mm bullet now in a gun designed to shoot 9mm bullet.
Makes more sense to go with a 9mm bullet.
Yeah.
At least it does to me.
Yeah. So how do you want to do this now? You want to, like, our preference and why, or you've got some stats you want to share with us?
Why don't we talk about our preferences first, then let's talk about some of the stats that I've pulled up here, and then we'll end it off with the bombshell.
My opinion has changed over the years, but right now I'm absolutely comfortable trusting my life, if I had to 9mm plus P plus ammunition. And I'll tell you why. I went looking today for an instructor or school that pushes anything other than 9. You know, Masada Yub carries 2 9mm. That's just one, and if that's not enough for you, I don't know what is. But there's no instructor out there that I could find that tells their students you have to come to class with a 45 caliber handgun or a 40 caliber handgun, and this is what I carry and this is why I carry it. All the modern day instructors that I've come across are all happy with the 9mm and what it can do.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've never even considered that point. But yeah, you look at Chris Costa, you look at Travis Haley. I know Travis also carries a 45 and does shoot his 45, but his training video that I watched by Magpul, he's shooting a 9. They're both shooting Smith & Wesson's. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it's a good point. Instructors are carrying the 9. They're trusting their lives to that. Why would I think that I would know more than they do? Mm-hmm. And I would say that I don't. So I'm with Trevor on this one. I have no problem with the 9mm. I think that it's a very capable cartridge. I think it's come a long way from its inception. And bear in mind that the 9mm is a very old cartridge. I forget the exact date. I looked it up and I was talking to Owen or somebody about it a while ago. I think it was like 1903 or 1908 or something like that. It first came out.
You're right. It is very old. Pat talked about that on Action Shooting Radio. The 9mm is, because we were saying 9mm in the classic division? That's not very classic. And he's like, do you actually know how old the 9mm round
it's
is?
It's older than the 1911.
So
yeah, no, it's a very old cartridge, which means it's tried and true. And if you know anything about technology, you want the stuff that's old. You want to fly the B-52 over the B1B, because the B-52 is going to do the job all day long. You know that it works. The B-1Bs, they break down every other flight, you know? It's the same thing with any other sort of technology. You want the stuff that's tried and true. You want the stuff that you know works. And the 9mm, it works. It's been around for this long. There are literally, I was going to say thousands, but I'm sure it's probably only hundreds of different handgun designs designed specifically around the 9mm cartridge. And for the most part, they all work absolutely flawlessly. Well, except for High Point, of course, but, you know, what can you say about that?
Another example, Matthew, of how things have changed and the progression of the 9mm has come so far. Open guns in competition now. The 38 Super is being kind of left behind. The hardcore guys are still holding on to it because they know it's easier. The guns typically run best in 45 or in 38 Super, it's easier to shoot the gun flat because you're getting more gas through the comp, etc. But 9mm open guns are the way of the future, and the reason why we're able to run our open guns in 9mm is that we're now producing muzzle velocities that rival the 357 Magnum out of a 9mm bullet. Rifle
and that's,
climber.
That's and insane.
That is insane.
I mean, that's beyond insane when you think about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you build the gun around it, the bullet will do it. There's no question. And, I mean, I unfortunately shot a couple through my Glock. I mean, the Glock survived, but I wouldn't do it every day. But, 1,400 plus feet per second coming out of my true bore. It's done with a 124 grain bullet, shotgun gunpowder, and a rifle primer.
Absolutely insane. It's crazy. And yep. People are like, how can you do that? You'll blow up your gun. Well, I mean, you design the gun around the bullet. Yep. Obviously, nope. The barrels are stronger in these open guns, and the chambers are stronger and completely fully supported compared to what you might find in, say, a Glock or something else.
Nobody's building open guns on a 45 anymore.
No. No. No, and that's a good point, Trev. The open guns going 9, or with 9, and It just blows my mind every time you say that. It's like, I can't believe 9mm can do that. It's crazy. So are you putting the bullet in a bit more shallow so that you can fit more powder in? It's got to be a compressed load, obviously.
It is. I run the bullet longer, more for feeding from the magazines because they're basically converted 38 Super magazines.
Okay.
So I run the bullet longer for that reason as well. But yeah, you couldn't. It would be uber compressed if you tried to get it down.
You couldn't double charge that for sure.
No, there's no way. There's no way. I mean, look, when we load for our Glocks with a 124 grain bullet, we typically run between 4.3 and 4.4 grains of Winchester 231 powder.
Right.
When I switch to a shotgun powder, depending which brand I use, I either put in 7.6 grains of powder or 8 grains of powder.
Wow.
And when I was using HS6, it was 8 grains of powder, and I wasn't getting the muzzle velocity that I wanted. It was actually too slow.
That is crazy.
Yeah, so you get 8 grains of powder into a 9mm case. There's
so the reasoning behind the shotgun powder is that it's a much faster burning powder, right?
No, it's a slower burning powder.
Oh, it's a slower burning powder.
So you get the powder burning into the comp.
Oh, right, because you want to keep the gas and stuff going out of the comp to blow down the muzzle lift. That's right. Yeah. Okay. And then you use a rifle primer to just spark it off that much hotter.
Well, there's some debate about that. Some people have said they've chronographed their ammunition with rifle. That was always my understanding, Matthew, but we talked about it recently on the other show. I understood that the rifle primer was a little hotter, so you were going to get a better ignition of the powder in the case.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, back in the day, when they were creating a lot of pressure in the case because they were using different powders, they were actually getting the primers coming back into your firing pinhole.
Oh, and so you use the rifle primer just because it's a harder, a harder material, so it doesn't blow back.
Yeah. So, which is true, I don't know, but both those theories have been tossed around for the rifle primer.
Interesting.
Now, I would think if we wanted better ignition, we might go to a small magnum pistol.
Right.
Primer.
See, I've always just been under the impression that, you know, a spark is a spark is a spark. Once the primer goes off, who cares if it's out of a magnum or, I mean, you're not getting any power from the primer. You're getting all of your power from the powder. So once the powder ignites, what's the big deal? What kind of primer you use?
Oh, I think a hotter primer is going to get more spark through that flash hole, igniting more of the primer, more of the powder right there, maybe?
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, we have magnum primers for a reason.
Oh, absolutely, and I know there's a reason for it. I'm hoping it's not just marketing. I'm sure one of our listeners know.
Bench rest primers are an exercise in marketing.
What are?
Yeah. Bench rest primers.
Oh, bench rest, yeah. So, listeners.
I think that the magnum primer thing is you're getting a faster burn. And if you have a faster burn, you're having a higher pressure burn.
Maybe.
I think that's how I would explain it, is because you're getting more flash, a bit bigger flash from the primer, more of the powder is igniting faster. It's kind of like burning a piece of paper with a match. You light it on one corner and it slowly spreads up. Or if you light it with a blowtorch that's burning the entire side of the piece of paper at once, you're going to burn that piece of paper up faster because more of it is lighting initially.
It's a good analogy. I wonder if it's true.
That's how I would explain it.
And I think that's the way it is, Owen, but I don't know enough.
I know we have at least one listener out there who knows the right answer, so I'm talking
Thomas
to you directly. Thomas, it could be you. I don't know who it is, but I know there's somebody who knows, so please start typing on your computer right now. Send us an email. Set us straight. Different types of primers?
Now that Thomas has been called out, whether he knows or not, he's going to find out so he can be the guy to answer, right?
All right. I'm looking forward to your reply, Thomas, even if it's, I don't know. What are you asking me for?
Because he knows. No, he's got a lot of experience. I'm sure he knows.
I'm sure he does.
All right. Probably. So anything else, Matthew?
No, or Owen hasn't given us his...
Yeah, well, I just wondered if you were done before we went to him. That's all.
Oh, I understand. You're doing
the
whole...
No, continue on. This is very interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah, you're napping, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I think Matthew and I
I'll
are done.
But...
Oh. Yeah. So, really? Owen,
you know what we could do, Matthew?
What?
Why we don't think the 45 is superior.
Well, let's see what Owen thinks first. Should you go with 9 or would you go with 45?
Oh, I'd go with 9.
Yeah, see, then that's just your answer. I know,
that's
and I knew you were going to do that, but you've got to give some reasonings now.
Yeah, you said you had this whole different philosophy on the whole thing and whatever and stuff.
I've always been of the opinion that, I mean, within reason, bigger caliber is simply a compensation for poor shot placement. And that works, you know, within reason. You can only go so low at the point you go, well, if I had a BB gun and perfect shot placement, right? That can only go so far. But I do think that there is far too much emphasis placed on caliber and not nearly enough emphasis placed on training and tactics and the employment of that caliber.
Yeah,
you know, like,
well,
I always put it to the analogy from when I was doing SCA fighting. So we would often fight in these mixed weapon tournaments or scenarios.
Are you talking about your LARPing? Is that what you're talking about?
I've never done LARPing.
I was right there. I was knocking on the door, just waiting. Sorry,
I've never been LARPing, so I don't really know what they do there. But
right.
There would be times when I would face a guy who had a sword and a shield, and all I'd have is a dagger. If employed correctly, the dagger will kill that guy with a sword and a shield just as dead.
Right.
But I had to simply adapt my tactics, the strengths of my tactics, and employ them against the weaknesses of the guy who had the sword and a shield. Right? So
instead of trying to attack him as if he's more superior and as if you have a sword and a shield and not changing your tactics, you're like, okay, well, I can't just fight him already being defeated. I've got to know that I can win, and I've got to use different tactics, and I got to assume that I don't have a sword and shield, so I've got to do it a different way.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep. And so, I mean, if you've decided I'm only going to carry a American Arms 22, I think it's American Arms. It makes those little
North American Arms.
Yeah, North American Arms.
Yeah, NAA.
Yeah. I mean, if that's my decision, then I need to focus on tactics and training that's going to help maximize that little bit of firepower that I have.
Right.
I think you're right, Owen. But at the end of the day, I think where the RCMP or not the RCMP. Well, it affected the RCMP as well. The RCMP had their own Miami, kind of.
I like how you cut yourself off and then turn it into a way to continue on with.
The FBI, I mean, your point is, Owen, you know, the 9 can work if you're trained well. The FBI was using the 9 during the Miami shootout, but the guys that they were shooting against had body armor. So it's a moot point. No handgun in any caliber was going to be effective that day. They needed their rifles.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't look at it that way. They looked at it as if the 9mm didn't do its job. Let's get a bigger handgun.
Yeah, sometimes a bigger handgun's called a rifle.
Sometimes it is. Yeah. All right, so yes. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe my analogy doesn't really fit.
No, I think it's great that you worked in swords and daggers and shields into a gun show.
I mean if you want to apply it to more directly to guns, it's kind of like saying I should have a rifle because this person had ballistic plates. Well, or you could have just shot him in the face.
Yeah,
I mean that's ultimately what they did.
Yeah,
yeah, but maybe they could have trained. If, I don't know. To me, that is. I would much rather put time and energy into training for that than simply trying to find another tool that somehow is going to be better than this other tool, and that's going to somehow make me, you know.
We see
to keep me alive or make me a superior shooter.
Yeah, I mean, you saw it what was the name of your sport?
LARPing International.
No, SCA.
Yeah, that
SCA. Yeah,
where guys on would think they needed a new sword all the time.
Yeah,
in archery,
or this weapon or that weapon. Or
yeah,
whatever.
In archery, it was I need a new release. I need to get these new bigger arrows. I need to get a new sight. I need to change the power of magnification on my scope.
Yeah.
I need to, no, you need to learn to shoot. That's
in
what
the
you Nipsic, need to do.
It's, oh, I need a true bore. Oh, no, I need an STI Eagle. Oh, no, I need a 1911.
The guy that called a while ago. The guy that called a while ago before the show started.
Yeah.
He's selling his Glock to get a CZ because for him, that's the answer.
Yeah.
No.
That's not the answer. Shoot your Glock.
Stop getting DQ'd. That's your answer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Rami, if you're listening, you're wasting your money.
Now you know.
Save that money and put it into your gas tank and into ammunition. Get out to the range and practice. Don't buy yourself a CZ. That's not going to make you a better shooter.
It's just going to,
Losing your I know everything I need to know attitude and practicing, that's going to help. Am I being too hard?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
That's his problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's you have to take a very middle-of-the-road balanced approach because – yes, you do need equipment that fits you. You know, if there is a point where you have to have the right equipment for you, but the equipment is still not going to make you the shooter.
Mm.
No.
Yeah. Like William's case, for example, I'd like to get William a shotgun that fits him instead of that adult-sized Mossberg 500.
Absolutely.
It's 10 years old. If we could get a custom shotgun and that would fit him, I would want to see what he could do.
Yeah. Just not against you.
But no, if you put that same
kid. Maybe trap is this kid's game. Maybe this kid is going to go as far as he can go in that sport. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you took that same shotgun that fit another 10-year-old who didn't have the ability and training that he has already.
That's right.
It's not going to
do anything with it.
Him. Nope. Yeah, yeah, he's not going to make him as good a shooter as William. So.
That's true.
Nope.
Anyway, that's my take on in most of these sort of debates, but I do agree with all of the, you know, the 9mm's come a long way, and statistically, I don't really.
Well,
not a lot difference as far as penetration, at least, you know, when it comes to 45 and 9.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Why wouldn't you go with the 45? I guess it would be the next question, like Trevor brought up earlier.
Okay, if we look at muzzle velocity and foot-pounds on the target, it doesn't hit with a lot more oomph than a 9mm does, because yes, it's slower, but it's heavier. The 9mm is lighter, but it's a lot faster. So I mean, that's what ballistics is all about. But for the let's say there's a slight nudge in knockdown power for the 45. If you're just talking bullet to bullet, not firearm platforms.
Bullet to bullet, yeah. 9mm, you're talking about 450 pounds-feet of energy. And a 45, you're talking anywhere between 500 and 800. So it is a bit, it's got a bit more, it does have a bit more, No, I had the right numbers. No, I didn't. So almost exactly the same, about 450 foot-pounds. So they're both almost have identical hit, like power factor, if you want to look at
that. Yeah, if you went out and you bought Winchester's personal defense ammunition in 9 and in 45 and tested them in ballistics gel, it'd be so close that then you would actually come down to the argument of which firearm to buy.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of cool platforms in 45. You don't necessarily need a 1911. As far as I can tell, the only thing people like about 1911s is the grip angle and the trigger.
Right.
Thank you, Facebook.
That's what it comes down to. We asked the question, and that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's H&K makes a nice 45, and FN, and Glock, of course. M&P, there are a lot of polymer striker-fired 45s out there that are double-stack 45s, but then you're getting into it's bigger, it's heavier, the bullets are bigger, the gun holds less. So for the slight advantage in ballistics you're going to get over the 45, I'd like to have a smaller, lighter, easier to shoot gun with more capacity.
Yeah, the thing is, though, the terminal ballistics may be slightly better in a 45.
Mm-hmm.
The external ballistics are not, though. The flight of the bullet from the handgun to the target, it's going to be dropping a lot faster than a 9mm. So you can actually shoot your 9mm at further distances without having to worry about holdover than you would with the 45. So that's something to bear in mind as well.
Right. When we did the No Limits Challenge, that wasn't super hot ammunition, and that was a 147 grain bullet. That wasn't even a 124 or a 115, and I just held at the center of the chest.
And you still hit it. It doesn't drop that much.
Nope.
So here's some interesting statistics. I pulled up a website. It's called BuckeyeFirearms.org, and if you go there, you'll be able to navigate your way to this article, and it's called An Alternate Look at Handgun Stopping Power. And let's look at the 9mm and the 45 first, and then we'll look at a couple other calibers that are interesting.
We should, because I don't know, but I don't know why it always comes down to those two.
Yeah.
You do have the 40 and the 357 SIG.
That's right. We'll talk about those as well. So first of all, this is written by, I believe, a doctor who has seen these hits firsthand. He collected all of his data himself. He kept track of it himself, basically. So, you know, he talked to participants of gunfights, read police reports, attended autopsies, scoured newspapers, magazines, all kinds of reliable accounts, and he documented all of that, tracked as much as he could, and he came up with some stats, which are very interesting. So, 9mm. The number of hits, the percentage of hits that were, so we're going to talk about three different things. The percentage of hits that were fatal, the number of rounds until incapacitation, and then the one-stop shots. So the percentage of hits that were fatal, 24% for the 9mm. 45, 29. So slightly higher, but statistically I would say insignificant. Average number of rounds until incapacitation, 2.5 for the 9mm, 2 for the 45. So again, a little bit better. One-stop shots, 34% for the 9mm, 39 for the 45. So the 45 does actually statistically bear out the 9mm slightly, but so slightly, I don't know that it's terribly significant. If we want to look at 40 caliber, percentage that were fatal, 25%, number of rounds, 2.4, and one stops, 45%.
What was the percent of
9mm? 9mm was 34, and 45 was 39, so significantly higher.
40 was significantly higher than both, yeah.
Yep. But 40 Smith and Wesson is almost... Sorry, go ahead.
45% is still not very good.
It's still not very good. So all of this, when you look through this, all of the numbers between 380 all the way up to 44 Magnum, if you look at those calibers between 380 up to 44 Magnum, they're almost all statistically identical.
Which means, at the end of the day, proves that a handgun is just...
It's a handgun.
Yep.
You just want to... Yeah, you pick the one that is best for you.
Yeah.
Here's the one that gets me the most. So 9mm, remember the percentage of the hits that were fatal, 24%. 22 caliber, 34% number of hits that were fatal. The one-stop shots, 31%. And what was the other one I was looking at? Number of rounds. Number of rounds until incapacitation, 1.3.
With the 22?
With the 22. So the 22 actually has the highest percentage, like the best numbers, out of even the 9mm, 40, and 45.
There we go. There's our
argument. So there's your argument right there. Stop arguing over 9mm and 45. Pick a handgun cartridge that you like and shoot it, because they're all basically the same, right down to the 22.
What about 357 SIG? I'm dying to know those numbers.
Sure. 357 SIG, almost identical to 40 Smith & Wesson. Number of hits that were fatal, 34%. So it's actually just a little bit lower than 22 caliber. Actually, no, it's identical to 22 caliber. Number of, let's see, the average number of rounds, 1.7. And one-stop shots, 44%. So, slightly better than the 40 Smith & Wesson, but again, very statistically similar. What this guy did is he charted all of the different handgun calibers, and then just for fun, he tossed in all the rifles and all the shotguns into two separate categories. And those tower. We're talking an average of about 50% stopping power with handguns. With rifles and shotguns, 80% stopping power.
Yeah.
So... if you're going to get into a gunfight, you want a rifle or a shotgun. Your handgun is not what you see in the movies. It's not a hand cannon. You can't just go into a gunfight with a handgun and say, 44 Magnum, most powerful handgun in the world. Yeah, Dirty Harry.
Blow your head clean off.
Yeah. You know what? It's not going to do it. I'm sorry.
And even handgun, at the time of that movie, it wasn't the most powerful handgun in the world.
Even then, it wasn't, no. A handgun's a handgun is a handgun. Pick the one that you like, that you shoot best. Get comfortable with it. Like Owen said, if you're going to pick a smaller caliber, work on different tactics. I mean, the advantages of a smaller, lighter recoiling caliber is that you can take very precise shots if you need to, and you can do it quickly because you don't have the same recoil management that you have to deal with the bigger guns. But if you want to carry a bigger gun, like a 40, 45, 357 SIG, go nuts. Carry it. If you can shoot it well, carry it. Shoot
it
well.
Here's some irony. The FBI wants to go back to the 9mm, and the U.S. military is looking for something bigger than a 9mm.
Yeah. Well, here's the difference. The FBI is allowed to use full metal jacket.
That's right.
Or is allowed to use a hollow point, and Army is not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, any closing thoughts on that, guys?
Get a
9mm. Get a 22.
Train.
And then train.
Yeah, definitely train.
And to all of our American listeners, just because we're not allowed to carry doesn't mean we don't know how to shoot.
That's right.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, so we're sorry that we're talking as if we know what we're talking about. We do a little bit.
We're good at that.
We really can't carry guns ourselves, but if we could, y'all know we'd be carrying 22s.
No.
Yeah, the best percentages out of the rest of them. I'm just saying. Vindicated. What?
I'm still not giving up my man card. I'll shoot the 357 SIG to get the 22 performance.
There you go.
Okay. Let's jump on into some listener feedback, shall we?
Perfect. Let's do it.
Matthew.
Yes, sir.
Why don't you take Harold? Don't call me sir. Why don't you take Harold's?
Sorry, sir.
That's awful.
Okay, this one comes to us from Harold. He writes, greetings. While Minister Blaney's common sense gun proposals have had some good, have some good news for gun owners, beware of any proposal that is labeled as common sense, because this term is always used by the anti-freedom gun lobby to justify their proposals. If the ruling class cannot immediately ban guns, then it seeks other methods to violate our civil rights. The tightening of the domestic abuse laws appear to fall in this category by expanding the prohibited persons category. I cannot find any specific details, but suffice to say that the Canadian government is trying to do to Canadians what the U.S. government did to Indians and blacks in the past. That is, completely disarm them, if not directly, then through the back door. Currently, violent crime in Canada, on a per capita basis, greatly exceeds the rate in the U.S., and that continues to fall due to increased firearms ownership. He's saying there, Canada's crime rate's going up, the U.S.'s is going down, even though they got more guns. If the Canadian violent crime rate is high now, wait...
I think what he's saying is the American crime rate is going down because they have more guns.
Right. He could be saying that, and
More guns equals less crime is the point he's trying to make, I believe.
Right. Okay.
If he's not going to make that point, I will.
You will, even though it's not true. That's cool. We'll make that point for him. If the Canadian violent crime rate is high now, wait until only government employees and criminals have firearms. On a different note, the article on the National Post website stated that ATTs were to be eliminated in the final proposed reform. This would be great, but is this really true? Have you heard anything about the elimination of ATTs, or is this just incorrect information?
Quite the opposite. Can I jump in here?
Yes, please.
On one hand, Blaney is saying we're going to roll the ATT into the license. And on the other hand, the sneaky is saying... you can now take your Swiss Arms to the range. You can now take your CZ-858 to the range, but you got to get an ATT. So right now, nobody knows how many, really, realistically, nobody knows exactly how many CZ-858s or Swiss Arms are in the country because they were non-restricted, ergo not registered. So now when they call for an ATT, what have they done? They've created a Swiss Arms and CZ-858 registry.
That's it.
So make up your mind. I don't need an ATT in a couple of months, but now I need an ATT. Yeah.
Yeah.
So on one hand, he's saying I'm getting rid of ATTs. On the other hand, he's saying you need an ATT for your CZ-858 and your Swiss Arms.
But that could be just because the ATTs aren't eliminated yet.
Yes, but if we apply for them now.
Yes, then we'll have an ATT registry of all of the Swiss Arms.
That's right. So if you have a Swiss Arms or a CZ-858.
Keep it home.
Yeah, wait until the ATT thing is gone.
Yeah.
And then see what happens.
That's right. All right, so I can go back then?
Yes.
Okay. This would be great, but is it really true? Have you heard anything about the elimination, or is this incorrect information? I hope this is true, because the Conservatives, since the Conservatives have not made substantive reforms since winning a majority to restore the civil rights of Canadians to keep and bear arms, by substantive, I really wish I could have read that properly. Substantial is what I would have used there, Harold. I'm just saying.
Substantive. You just know you're not so many T's. Substantive.
Oh, I put in too many T's. I'm going to say substantial.
Yeah. This is funny to me.
Yeah. he means concealed carry or the elimination of restricted and prohibited categories or the eliminations of ATTs. The elimination of the long gun registry does not count. You are still stuck with all the violations imposed by Bill C-68. Just remember that firearms ownership is a right. They can take away your freedom to exercise your right, but they cannot take away the right because rights are inalienable. I like that last sentence there. That's a good point there, Harold. Absolutely. They are hindering our right to exercise our right, but yeah, that right is still there.
Yeah, all right. Rights aren't granted to you by the government.
That's right. Right. Somebody should say right again. Okay. Finally.
Correct.
Harold, I'm really sorry we're butchering this, but...
I concur.
We're going to carry on.
Sorry.
Finally, for the listeners, I recommend they go back and listen to Slamfire Radio podcast number 3, because it is great. What else can I say? Well, he apparently knew what else to say because he continues on. The third episode gives a detailed history of how Canadian Firearms Podcast started, and the episode includes Chris Anderson, a former Canadian Reload radio host and founder. Cheers from Harold, and he writes a P.S. I gave your podcast a 5-star iTunes rating and encourage other listeners to do the same if they have an iTunes account.
Thank you so
and
much,
if they
Harold.
Don't, go get an iTunes account.
There you go.
I see, earlier
there really is
I,
no excuse.
I saw a note in here where Trevor hits the go button, but he's not going to now.
I hit it in the middle.
Oh, you hit it in the middle.
Yeah, I was going to hit it at the end, but when the ATD part came up, that's when I hit it.
Oh, so that was the hitting of the go button.
That was my go button
in the middle. I thought I was looking forward to another one because, like, we just had one. Now we're going to get another one. Why is he yelling at him for giving us a 5-star iTunes rating? I don't know why, but it's going to be fun to listen to.
So now it's a go-go button.
It's a go-go button.
No, stop that. Don't ever do that again. Don't do that.
Speaking of iTunes review, why don't we read his? Who pulled it up?
Nobody.
Crickets. Beauty. All right.
Well, all right.
No, I'm going to pull it up and we're going to read it.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, thanks, Harold. We were going to read your 5-star review that you didn't leave.
Yeah, you left us a 5-star rating, but no review. So,
but don't get me wrong.
Way to get our hopes up. No. Way to get our hopes up. We spent minutes, literally not even quite three minutes. It was about 2.5 minutes.
Looking for this thing.
We looked for it, and it wasn't there.
Yeah.
Look, I'm going to be crying into my pillow tonight. That's all I got to say about that.
There's some jokes there.
There are many jokes. I regret saying what I said. Let's continue on.
Yeah, just don't get any feathers in your teeth.
Shout-outs?
Yes, I have quite a few, actually. Kyle, thank you for kicking me in the cyber butt and getting me to pull my head out of my butt and realizing all I need to do is just buy an upper. I don't need to buy another gun and sacrifice the Daniel Defense. To Jim, thank you for the reloading tips and information about the RCBS X die for 223. I can't wait to get to work on that. And Nathan Anderson from Osprey Ordnance, he's been keeping close tabs on my Versamax progress, and I've got their extended bolt release, and he's sending me a bolt that I need to attach said bolt release, and was also helping me figure out what was wrong with my pin in the trigger group and why that pin was walking. So thank you to Nathan for that. If you have not checked out Osprey Ordnance yet, you're a communist.
And so, thank you for listening.
Yeah. Be sure to join both of our National Firearms Associations. They are the Canadian Shooting Sports Association and the National Firearms Association. They do great things to help ensure that your rights and privileges and firearm freedoms are preserved, but they need numbers and they also need cash. So please, never mind the infighting. I like this one better. I like that one better. Never mind. Just never mind. They're different, but they're both working for you. So
instead,
like,
you can
you
argue
doing?
About which host you love the best on Slam Fire Radio.
Oh, heavens.
That's not enough
to go there. we each bring something different and special to the table.
That's special. In fact, I forgot my helmet again this week.
You did. And your bus was so short as a child, it was just you and the driver.
Yes.
That's funny because you and your dad are both bus drivers.
It is funny.
That is funny.
It's funny on many levels.
You know what's not funny? Gun Owners of Canada.
It's awesome.
It is awesome. Go over there. Check it out. Register if you haven't yet. It's a great place to share information and ask questions about firearms ownership and whatnot in Canada and show off your guns and drool over other people's guns. We've got a little forum over there where you can post questions about the show and make fun of Matthew, stuff like that.
Happens every week.
Get over to Facebook and like us. We're only at 1,024 and counting, and we need a few more. It helps get the show noticed, helps get us new listeners. Words are hard.
Words are hard, yes, tonight especially. Yeah.
And then we're on a couple of networks. The Reno Viola. You get that, Owen?
Yeah, Viola. I heard you the first time.
Viola. We're an outdoor web radio network. We're on there, as well as the Crusader Podcast Network. Tons of great material on each of those, so be sure to check them out. Until next week, gentlemen, I'm Ron Burgundy.
Hug your guns.
Take someone shooting.
And Owen's got to say something smart now.
Yeah, bye.
Yep. We gone. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could have
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.